Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 656. It's the 6th of December, 2016. On the podcast today, I have Ed McDermott from Optiva Securities, who acts as corporate broker to Angus Energy, that's ANGS, and small cap aficionado Doc Holliday, talking about Rockhopper Exploration, Sound Energy, Nostra Terra, Metal Tiger, Pyrrhus Investments, Sirius Minerals, Paternoster Resources, and Prospects Oil and Gas.
The Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me right now on the podcast is Ed McDermott from Optiva Securities, who acts as corporate broker to Angus Energy. Ed, thanks for coming on.
Hi, Justin. Thanks for having me.
That's all right. Well, now, we've not spoken before. I'm not on the podcast. I've spoken to you on the phone before. But I obviously, I'm a holder in Angus Energy. I like to say that. And I'm off this week, so I'm putting out some podcasts of information. And I thought you'd be a good guy to talk to, because obviously you know about the story. And I've got to point out, this is information. It is not, to be used to invest on. I mean, we're not giving investment advice here. This is just information on the stock. So
I think there's a lot of opinions involved here. And obviously, anything that's fact can sort of be cross-referenced against the prospectus.
Exactly. But, and do you know what? It's like anyone who...
research, as you like to say.
I always say that. I always say that because the thing is,
correctly.
Because people are very biased towards their own stocks, and that's why we invest in them for a certain reason. And I try and put over those reasons. I try and be objective, but of course I'm invested, so I do have an interest. So that may be to some people subjective. So, but of course it may be. So what I'm saying is, some research, and hopefully we'll present an unbiased case.
Yeah, I think it's difficult. You know, everyone has an emotional attachment to certain stories. They like certain management, they like certain projects. It's very understandable, but I think, you know, it is very important in this day and age particularly to do one's research and not sort of take what other people say as gospel.
Exactly.
I think you generally seem to have a pretty fair take on these stories, which is good.
So. Yeah, and also, do you know what? You've got to take responsibility for hitting the buy button on any stock you purchase or invest in, because essentially, if you take a tip, and I've been investing for quite a long time now, and I've acted on tips in the past, they haven't worked out, and I end up like feeling I should blame the person who gave me the tip. But no. I press the buy button. It's my money. So I thought, in fact, you know what? I'm going to take control of my investment and do some research, and then I'll take full responsibility. So having said that, let's talk about Angus Energy. I do hold a stock in Angus, and I like the story here because I've written a blog on them. Because essentially, take us through what Angus have at the moment, Ed, asset-wise.
Well, Angus, obviously the key assets at the moment, you have the Brockham license, which is very important due to the fact that it is a production license. It's also very well placed in the Weald Basin, in that not only can it drill its own acreage, it could in theory drill other people's acreage, obviously with the requisite permissions and the sort of right agreements in place. Additionally, the Lidsey site, which is also a producing site, that is going to be drilled secondary to the Brockham license, but it's already producing at the moment, and it's just being made ready for the drilling that will happen in due course.
Yeah. So it's got Brockham and Lidsey, and they've raised money for sort of two reasons, really, to improve flow at both these wells, but also the Brockham well, which is the one that's quite important here. There's a formation, isn't there, Kimmeridge Limestone underneath here, deeper down, which is the same kind of formation that is under Horse Hill. Is that correct?
Well, that's correct, yeah. It's believed to be slightly more mature and very, very well fractured, which is a key. I'm fairly certain you had Barney on, who explained this, I think, certainly better than I will. But effectively, it's the same Kimmeridge horizon that we see at Horse Hill, which produced on its sort of very brief flow test, upwards of 1,400 barrels of oil a day equivalent. I think it's very, very important. But I think, it's also important to remember that there are potentially more than one horizons in that well. So you have the Portland, which I think is the, well, it is the already producing asset there. You have the Corallian, which I don't believe has been tested before. And then obviously the Kimmeridge, which could have multiple ales for all we know. But we do know that it tested very well at Horse Hill. And certainly at Brockham, it seems to be slightly more mature and very well fractured. So,
yeah, so up until today or recently, I mean, you know, the Horse Hill, UK Oil and Gas, have been getting a lot of publicity, haven't they, for drilling through Kimmeridge and discovering what is, I don't know, is it, it's come out the new update recently, but originally when it hit the front page of the newspapers, they were talking about 120 billion barrels of oil. I don't know, the tiny percentage that is recoverable, of course. But sure. What's interesting is, like you said, I did look over that new tech, you know, sort of analysis, and I couldn't make a lot of it apart from at Brockham it seems on initial observations to look as good if not better at Brockham than it does at Horse Hill. Am I being you know, is that right or not?
No, I think that's fair enough. I think Dave Lenegast, for example, was extremely important in this particular scenario, because his sort of tenacity, if you like, is what got the well cuttings tested by NewTek, which, you know, came back with this information. So I think the Lenegast factor has been quite important here, and certainly that's what was indicated. Now, the number that I, of all the sort of material that I've seen, the number that I like to sort of refer back to, I off the top of my head I can't remember what it is, embarrassingly, but I believe it was something like 150 million barrels of oil per acre on that license. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that for me is a number that, you know, it stood up. It was, you know, the various consultants all agreed that that was a kind of fair number. Yeah. So I think, you know, if we extrapolate that out, yes, you reach this sort of number, which is many billions. But I like to personally focus on that number, because I think it's, you know, if you can fairly say that there's 158 million barrels, that's a hell of a lot of oil. Now, even if you work on a sort of, you know, a 10% recovery rate, that's a lot of oil.
Yeah. And the reason why I like the Angus story, for example, like I said, you know, UK Oil and Gas, they're a major shareholder of that area down the Weald Basin. But they also have a little chunk in Angus Energy, don't they? But what I like is Angus Energy are, you know, 55% operator-producer. They have producing license, like you said, which is very important. And, you know, UK Oil and Gas...
I think...
Yeah.
At the end of the day, you know, from this well test, for example, that you know, once they've drilled the well, every bit of oil that they produce from that test will be, you know, pounds in the bank, effectively. So I think that's a, you know, it's very encouraging for shareholders, because in theory it means less dilution. It means that they're in a position to help fund any future development, any future acquisition they do. Now, naturally, if there's any success from this well, which, you know, everything leads to suggest that there should be, you know, there's always a bit of engineering risk, there's always a bit of geological risk, but as we understand it, that those are sort of fairly minimized. So essentially they're in a position where they could drill another, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 wells at each site, and you know, that doesn't include sort of sidetracks out of those wells. So
and let's not forget it was the guys from Angus Energy who drilled Horse Hill, wasn't it?
Well, I think that's another key piece of information. I mean, they're obviously, you know, I must confess, I obviously know the company quite well. I've known the chaps for a number of years. I was on the board of Stellar Resources, which it is also an investor in the Horse Hill story. And, you know, I really think, for example, Jonathan Tidswell, who's a very technical chap, he very, very smart man as well. I don't want to give him a big ego, but he you know, he's just very interested in a lot of things, history, etc., etc. And obviously you've got Paul Bonk, who is, you know, a steady hand at the tiller. You know, he's got a good corporate background. So, you know, these guys, they know what they're doing. And kudos to Angus, and also obviously kudos to UCOG and Dave Lenegast, who have really helped drive that on. And I think, you know, both Jonathan and Paul would also sort of would say the same thing.
But I honestly don't think, obviously, like I said, I'm a shareholder, but I honestly don't think, as yet, the potential has been priced in here. I mean, maybe it'll happen closer towards spudding time, which is quite soon, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think there was very little value attributed to, if you look at the breakdown of how the company's valued pre-IPO and at IPO, there's very little value at all attributed to this, you know, Kimmeridge play. So, in theory, there had to be some valuation on it, but, you know, naturally it couldn't be a sort of high one. So, obviously, it was a very popular IPO. So it's difficult to say, you know.
So why wasn't any value?
To blow the trumpet of one of our own stocks, but at the end of the day, you know, we obviously rate the company very highly, and we think that there is certainly a lot of upside for investors.
Yeah. So why it was, you know, I mean, is it? I mean, there wasn't value, you know, attributed to the Kimmeridge play. Is it because it's quite high risk or what?
I think there's a risk in any well. Like I said, whatever you drill, you have a couple of issues. You have an engineering and technical risk factor, and you also have a sort of geological risk factor. Now, those are things that, obviously, on the engineering front, you can take more control of, but, you know, geologically, Mother Earth, as we know, can be quite a difficult one at times. But I don't think it's, you know, I think as far as oil wells go, and again, please don't quote me because I'm not an expert. I'm certainly not an engineering, a drilling engineer or a reservoir engineer. But, you know, from my experience of looking at a lot of these things, I don't think it's a particularly technically or engineering challenge on this well.
Yeah, especially for guys who've done this before, you know, pretty much the same kind of geology. They've done it before at Horse Hill, so it's not as if they're new to the game, is it, here, you know?
No, absolutely. So I think that, again, if you like, sort of mitigates the risk a little bit further for investors. So,
yeah, so
it's not like they're new kids on the block.
No, exactly. So when are we expecting this drill to happen? Is it going to be this side of Christmas or what?
Well, we'd like to hope so. I mean, certainly that's what the company indicated when it was, you know, doing its marketing. They obviously have their EA approval, which was a very important hurdle. You know, the other two approvals, which are the health and safety and the UK... Oh, sorry, the OGA, rather. Once they've got those two, you know, it's really a formality. So... Okay. I see no reason why they shouldn't drill this side of Christmas.
That's exciting stuff. All right, marvelous stuff. And like I said, it's definitely one for you. If you're not watching Angus Energy, definitely put it on your watch list because it's a very interesting story. You know, the background, the geology, everything. The guys there, like I said, have done it before at Horse Hill, but then now they have a production license. And like you say, if they wanted to, if other companies wanted them to, they can drill from there if they want to other places in the Weald Basin.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, there's wells have been drilled, you know, on a horizontal level for 14 kilometres plus in the UK, I believe. If you look at Witch Farm, you know, a lot of their wells have been drilled out horizontally into the sea, but it's actually from onshore production platform. You know, Horse Hill and Brockham are roughly, I believe it's, let's say 5 or 6 miles for argument's sake, but it might be kilometres.
Yeah.
So it's certainly not undoable. There are obviously other assets near the Weald Basin. As you can see, there's a lot of activity going on there now, which is really exciting. So, like you said, it's something you should put. You should put all these companies on your watch list: UCOG, Doremus, Upland's another good example of something that's doing UK oil and gas because it's, you know, it's exciting. It's in our backyard. And you know, the more energy independent that this country can be, the better. And for all we know, we could be sitting on a sort of Texan kind of oil situation. Obviously, I don't want to sort of overhype it, but certainly from my own personal opinion, I find it very interesting. I love oil and gas in general. I think there's something very interesting, and I know probably a lot of us all grew up watching Dallas and things like that, but it just, you know, it is an exciting space to be in.
Yeah. Okay. And so, for example, like I said, I don't know if you have the answer to this question, but you know, I'm going to ask it anyway. So, for a production license for UK oil and gas, for example, I mean, how long does that take to acquire? And you know, I mean, have they started applying for that or what?
Sorry, which company? Are
I
we
mean, UK oil and gas. Would they have started applying for that or not yet?
I don't actually know, to be honest, where it comes to UCOG. I suspect they probably would have, you know, they would be on that case quite heavily. But I think, you know, it could, in my understanding, it could take a good few years. You know, as we saw how long it took just to get a testing approval. So, you know, it could easily be a few years. So if they wanted to kind of expedite that process, they, you know, one of their options would potentially be to drill it from Brockham.
Yeah. So exactly. Well, that's why
I can't speak for UCOG. I don't know whether that would be their plan.
No, exactly.
But it's certainly a nice option for both companies to have, I think.
Yeah, definitely. That's an extra reason why Angus, you know, is quite exciting there, because it's got that production license. So, like you say, as soon as they get all out of the ground, they can turn that into cash. And of course, if you've got cash coming in, there's less chance to go back to the market to raise funds, which is obviously good for shareholders. And lovely,
absolutely.
Ed, good to talk to you. And hopefully,
and you, Justin?
Yeah, hopefully speak again soon.
Indeed, look forward to it. Take care.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Wales.
And joining me on the podcast right now is small cap authority. I know you like that word. It's Doc Holliday, right, Doc?
Aficionado.
Oh, sorry, yes, someone.
Aficionado. Tell you about it.
It's got the like it's Italian, isn't it? The aficionado. Hey, and it's quite relevant for today, anyway. So, or this week for the Italian banking crisis. So, Doc, what are you looking at? What's piquing your interest at the moment?
Lots of different things, from billion-pound companies down to million-pound companies, I guess. But it's all the junior markets, nonetheless. I've had a quick look at the sort of interest from the back end of last week and the start of this week in Sirius Minerals. The share price has fallen through that 20p fundraise level. I think they raised about 370 million for them to help develop their assets up in York. The business is clearly moving on into the next stage. I mean, that's a colossal raise. I think there was quite a surprise in the market when they looked to raise that cash. And most people thought they were going to raise at about 26, 27p. It appears that the bondholders dictated the price at 20p. And a lot of the orders that were placed out in the sort of retail market were filled quite nicely. It was obviously massively oversubscribed at that level. And it presented some great opportunity for people to sort of release a profit more or less instantaneously. And when you're talking about a £370 million raise on a company that got a valuation of whatever it was, £800 million or something like that, it sort of presented a really easy, substantial profit opportunity. And I think the reason why we've seen the shares fall from 26p below the 20p fundraise price down to sort of 17.5, 18p is literally down to the fact that people have been in a position to be able to take a healthy gain very, very early on without having to carry any risk. That sort of bottomed out. The shares did top out earlier in the year up near 50p. I suggested a lot back then in social media that it wasn't going to a pound, that this fundraise was always known and the price would come off, and it was actually a bigger void. But at 17.5, 18.5p, I think it's really back in the buy zone, and there's absolutely no reason why it won't go and trade higher than 20p. And I'm sort of looking for 25p from a 17.9p entry.
Yeah, cool. Okay, and I just looking at the chart there. It's a heck of a climb and heck of a fall, isn't it, you know?
It is, and the thing is, you know, you look at that and you kind of figure out it's one of these sort of illiquid, you know, AIM companies that gets a bit of love and it spikes up and then, you know, the dance is over and everybody's moved on. But we're talking about big institutions putting in big money. I think it got £1.5 billion market cap earlier in the year. Again, wasn't one that interested me at all. If anything, it was a slam dunk sell. And shares have now sort of bottomed out down at this level. You can see that there's a rationale as to why it come off hard from that mid-25p level, just because there was so much opportunity for people to take a turn in the market. I think that that choppiness is out the way now, and it'll move to the upside.
Yeah. I mean, while I'm talking now, I'm on holiday when this is going out, but I mean, did you see the pictures of Prospect Oil and Gas's drill rig being set up there?
Oh, absolutely. I had a chat with Ed about a week ago. We met up, had a bite to eat. I mean, I'm fortunate enough that I live in the Northern Welfare Safaris, as some people refer, but I'm fortunate enough not to be too far away. So I went along and hooked up with Ed, had a quick chat with him there. He was happy to discuss it. The company's on track. Everything's going moving along as one would expect. I believe now that the civil company, you know, handed over to the drilling team, and that they were rigging up on site, and everything was expected to drill ahead this month, and, you know, very happy with how things are progressing. So yeah, I mean, it's all to play for now. Naturally, there's been some profit taking, you know, people wanting to take a bit of risk off the table, you know, going through any drilling campaign, there's always a bunch of things you can crash into and can go wrong, but you know, a lot of these go right, and when they go right and you have a find, the, you know, the potential gain in these companies, it can be 2, 3, 5, 10-fold. So I kind of figure that people have been jostling around a little bit, perhaps just taking a bit of that capital away or taking a bit of risk off, and are now of the opinion and view we're going to go and carry it through news. I'm completely confident that these guys have appointed the best of everything. If it goes horribly wrong now, it's not because they haven't done the right job. They've got the best, you know, rig companies. They've got the best people on the ground. They've got the best of advisors for the size of the company that they are, I might add. So I think that should it not work out, they give it its best shot. And should this one deliver, then I think it's a big hats off moment to the management team there, because they've actually been diligent enough to go out and really put the best of everything into it. And I think that's a testament and a credit to the company.
Yeah. And anything else on the news that's hit you, you know, in the last couple of days?
Well, yeah, I mean, look, Paternoster Resources have just taken a big 25% stake in Piri Investments. Piri Investments, again, tiny little business, not a lot known about it, and I totally understand that you've seen your ass with these shell companies, and I get that. I mean, I've had a bit of a spank round the bottom myself this year, but I'm, you know, having said that, there's been a lot of gains made on the back of these things, and you know, Paternoster Resources have now got a controlling stake in that company. The last time they've done this, they did it with MXO, 1p to 4.5p. They were seed investors and one of the early, you know, dictators of where the business would steer in Pluto's Power Gen. I think they were getting in there at a seed entry well below a penny. You know, that's gone up to 2.5p today. I think it traded up a bit higher recently. They did the same at Metal Tiger. So whilst PRS as a business doesn't seem to get the recognition or valuation correlation, what they do have a decent record of is getting these little vehicles, vending in some decent management team and assets, or what appear to be decent management team and assets, and the share price reacts favourably. They've got a track record of that. That is an actual fact. You can't take that away from them. And they're doing the same here. So, again, very high risk. Should only be punt money, I would say, at this stage. But Piri Investments looks like it could be an opportunity as well.
Yeah. I mean, it was suggested, I think, Alexis, on the one for your watch list, you know, on the podcast recently. But the thing is, I know people have made lots of money off shells, you know, but it takes a while, doesn't it, to formulate a strategy. And it's come to me that my strategy is it a more sort of investor looking for companies. And of course, people make money on this, but I like to see a bit more forward guidance, you know, and knowing what's happening in the business before. And and that's obviously baked into the risk reward of a shell. You don't really know. And so when they reveal what's happening, you can have a major re-rate. But likely, if things don't go to plan, and they haven't quite a few times this year on shells, it can go the other way. But, you know, I just like a bit more clarity, forward guidance on it, a company strategy, you know, than just being a shell and seeing the cash levels and a couple of people being invested. So that's, I mean, you know, that's my, everyone has their strategy, don't they, you know?
Okay, go on. at the end of the day, just, I mean, you know, you're talking about a game of Russian roulette in some respects, because there's so many different variables and outcomes that can happen. You know, with all the best of intentions, things can go horribly wrong. And there's so many different variables of what can get in the way. You know, when they do work, they pay pretty big, particularly if you've got the right sort of entry on them and you can see which direction they're going in. But it is what it is, and I think your review of it is, of these situations, is a fair analysis given what 2016 has yielded for many of these tight companies. And then you sort of hop over to the likes of, you know, announcements on Monday from Metal Tiger, the new guy who was appointed as the old board members went out, Mr. Alex Borelli. As I've been suggesting about a week ago in social media, he was on his bike. He was on his bike the minute he tried to do that business with Metal Tiger. I think Alex is a good guy, you know. I think when you look at what he did with BMR, he went into that company, one of the ex-management team, had done a runner with $1 million. He went and tracked him down and said, look, you know, you return $1 million and I'll go about getting this business back on track. If not, you're going to have a legal case and battle on your hands. We're not just letting you slip away with the money. Believe it or not, that ex-director of BMR coughed up $1 million and started to pay it back. And Borelli pegged himself on the map as a guy with a great deal of integrity and credibility, or certainly tenacious enough and, you know, cheeky enough to go after that. You know, all too often in the junior markets, people seem to do as they please. And Borelli's proven, you know, in the past that is not something that he's going to stand by and take. I'm dead surprised, actually, that this company has allowed this to take place. This isn't good for Metal Tiger. When you've got Paul Johnson going from the company, suggesting, you know, that he's not the man to take the company any further. He's gone as far as he possibly can. They've appointed Alex Borelli because they believe he's got the integrity and credibility to advance the company. To then go and sack him, reappoint Paul Johnson to the board and a number of other executive directors. And now we start to see Terry Grammer. He's coming off as chairman to a non-exec director. I think that's indicative that he's on his way as well. There's obviously been a big bust up. There's no danger of it. I've been sort of privy from a distance, really, that there's been a lot of problems here at Metal Tiger. The next thing you're going to see, the company will raise some cash. There'll be a bucket load of warrants attached, like there was the first time round, and it's rinse and repeat. That's honestly how I see it. Doesn't get many friends in the public domain. I appreciate that. But, you know, the last time we spoke about this company, shares were trading at 5 and 6p near enough. So I don't feel any sort of guilt in actually suggesting at 2p that people really should now start to understand the way that this business is working. I do hope for the long-term shareholders that those guys who have returned to the company can actually deliver on some of the promises made in the past and now get the business back on track and get that share price to a reasonable level. I just find it pretty poor that the person or people that they appointed to the company as they walked have now been sort of pushed because, for whatever reason, something didn't suit. The takeout from BMR, or the merge from BMR with Metal Tiger, it may well have been a case that Borelli stood back, he's looked at the valuation and said, hang on guys, you've put me in here, I've agreed to take this on, I've now started crunching numbers, and the reality is Metal Tiger is grossly overvalued, and as a result, for me to put it into this business, I've got to value it fairly for my shareholders at BMR. Maybe this is just a guy that does have credibility and integrity and tried to do the right thing. I mean, it doesn't make any sense for him to be the CEO of two companies, drawing in two lots of salary. You know, maybe it is just a way that Borelli was a cheeky opportunist who, you know, didn't have the interests of Metal Tiger shareholders at heart at all, and he's a bad man, and that's why he tried to do what he was doing. But it could be the case that he just stood back, he crunched the numbers, and he tried to do the right thing, and it didn't suit the agenda of other individuals in the marketplace. Time will tell. The testament of time always proves this to be the case, and we'll wait and see with anticipation as to what happens next at the Metal Tiger saga.
Yeah, and do you know what? I've pretty much lost a bit of track of what's happening in Metal Tiger. I do know there's a loyal fan base there, or shareholders there that, you know, deserve a bit better than what's been going on of late. So hopefully, you know, this is a start of a turnaround I just hope, you know, they see some positives here, because like I said, there's a definite, you know, a loyal shareholder base there.
There was a very vocal loyal shareholder base that become very, you know, quiet as you saw certain members of the management team, you know, slide off into new jobs, new positions, you know, through their own admission, weren't the right people to take the company forward. Suddenly, you know, it just appeared that as Mr. Johnson left the company, a lot of the support in the general public left as well. Now, Paul's returned to the business. I would say, should you just happen to see that the company raised a bit of cash and they just happen to have a bunch of warrants attached, and then we just happen to see the same type of noise re-enter the market, it would be very suggested to me actually that the malfeasance of the markets has really played out, because there is going to be a loyal fan base that have actually taken a right old clipping of the wings as the price has come off from 4p, 5p, 4p, 3 and 2, and actually down into the high ones. Them people I genuinely actually feel sorry for. I think the ones that seem to conveniently be out of the company as the dramatic changes, unexpected changes take place, and then suddenly re-enter again on more sort of controversy, all seems a bit too convenient. I said it in the past, at the early part of summer, there's something quite incestuous about what's going on there. I do hope, as I say, that the business can now get back on track, and maybe under the stewardship of the old management team, they can start releasing 1 hour less a day to help get that price going. Who knows? But, you know, as jokes aside, I'm sort of being a bit cynical and jokey at the end there. It's if nothing else, it's entertaining. That's for certain.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, anything else, or do you want to end on that bombshell, the Metal Tiger bombshell?
No, because honestly, you know, there is, people sort of say, oh, you know, you've got issues with the company, you've got issues with the manager. I don't have any issues with anybody or anything. You know, life's too short. I mean, kind of get to the point where if you put emotions into what you're doing on a day-to-day basis, you know, things will really start to get you down. I kind of figure that that there's loads of different things happening in the market. You know, we talked about Rockhopper on the show not too long ago. The oil price surged up last week on the OPEC announcement. But, you know, one of the things that sort of slipped in there is that Indonesia have been suspended from OPEC. They're going to continue with their production. So you actually look at the cuts that OPEC have made against the production, which will still continue. You know, they're probably going to be producing more oil than what people anticipate, given those sort of metrics that have conveniently been sort of layered further down, should we say. So I kind of think that, the likes of Rockhopper, for example, should have been really, you know, reacting positively, as did many other of these, proven junior companies with oil in place. That's not been the case. You know, we've got situations out in Italy. I think you mentioned it on the podcast, mentioned it on the call before we recorded the podcast or at the start of the podcast, that there's obviously some upset for certain politically out in Italy. You know, Rockhopper have got assets out in Italy. Sound Oil have got assets out in Italy. We know that Rockhopper have got a shed load of oil out in the Falkland Islands, and we know Sound Oil have got a very highly anticipated result out in Morocco. But both of these companies have got exposure to Italy, and Italy isn't in the best of fettle. You know, the OPEC announcement isn't what people thought it was, because when you look at countries that have been suspended from OPEC prior to this announcement, they're still producing the same amount. So when you start jiggling the figures, you realise there's actually not been a cut. If anything, it's a marginal cut, or they're actually producing more. So we start, you know, you look at these companies that are popular within the junior markets, and you sort of say, why is it not going up? Well, you know, OPEC and that made that announcement, oil prices flying, companies like BP are doing well. I've gone and bought this company that's got a bucket load of proven reserves, and it's not moving. Or, you know, you look at Sound and you say they've got Badile kicking off, you've got this big sort of gas asset out in North Africa. Why are they going down, or why aren't they reacting? Simple answer: exposure to Italy, and the fact that this whole oil environment perhaps isn't as fluffy and wonderful and nice as one would believe. And just before I go, because I'm probably stretching it out now, I did mention Nostra Terra a week or two back, shares have gone from 1.25 towards 2p. It's intraday sort of high of about 2.4p. It's down at 1.5 again today. What's going on there? Well, the company have snooped the Pine Mills asset from Mosman Oil and Gas. Mosman sort of, their share price went up 300%. Nostra's went up about 65-70. It's back off again. I've spoke to a number of guys in the city. What's your interpretation of events? They all say the same thing, and they actually agree with me regarding my rationale earlier in the year and now that Cantor's, they're not just targeting Nostra. They have a desk there that's doing this en masse throughout the junior markets, but Cantor's are taking a position. They kind of look at companies. This is the rationale. They look at companies. They can see that at some point they may need some cash. They short the businesses, and then they offer to give some of the cash to the businesses or to the brokers who are raising the money, and they cover the positions like that. That's what's happening en masse. It was my belief that's what's happened with Nostra Terra when they put out a little bit of news last week. The share price reacted at 75% gain. They managed to temper it and keep a lid on it. I kind of figure when you look at this company, consolidated at 4p, they raised cash at 2p. They just announced news which helped the company like Mosman and with their reputation go up 300%. And this little thing still hasn't really got going. Just, you know, maybe people just don't like it. Maybe it's a case that, you know, Matt's had his time and, you know, there's nothing else can happen. But maybe, just maybe, this company have actually gone and got themselves a bit of production, some decent little assets that they can work with, and they're going to go and extend and expand on that. And if that's the case, at some point, the market will start to believe again. And normally when that happens, when something's been absolutely rinsed and hammered down, there's only one way it can go. Again, high risk. You don't want to be putting the ranch on it. But there's opportunity. If you can see when a company like Cantor's are sitting on the order book one side for 2 and 3 weeks solid, and the minute this bit of news comes out, they flip because they've got to try and control and temper what's going on. These are little sort of strategies for investors in the market. You know, when I look at junior companies, if I see winter floods as a buyer of the stock, you know, perhaps not towards the end of the year, but at the start of this year, early last year, when Winterfold flipped onto the buy side, when they got interested, it was generally a good sign. There's a lot of people out there who just, they'll buy and sell based on order book and the RSP movements. Again, it's not necessarily what I do, but there's people who do it. There's people who buy on charts. There's people who buy on fundamentals. If you want to be, you know, a well-seasoned investor, you want to go all the way in this business, you've got to understand how everybody else makes their investment decisions so you can make yours based consciously on what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It'd be interesting to see that. Just looking at the chart there, it gapped up on that news back in, was it last Friday or something? There was, and it started, it's just below 1.5, and it's there at the moment. So it'll be interesting to see if it breaks down below that opening gap up. So, be interesting to see. I mean, like you say, at the end of the day, you know, if he does produce like what they said in the RNS there, then hopefully this should start to go northwards. Hopefully, marvellous, Doc. Have a nice week. I'll speak to you next week, fella.
Cheers, thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.